For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What up, baby? It's the Preachers and Sneakers podcast. On today's episode, I have professional podcaster and author Knox McCoy stopping by. He's written a book in the past called The Wondering Years, and he's got a new book out called All Things Reconsidered. Not only that, he's a hilarious dude. He's got two extremely popular podcasts called The Popcast with Knox and Jamie, as well as The Bible Binge. The dude does it all. And he was kind enough to spend an hour with me to talk all things writing, pop culture, preachers and sneakers, and a whole host of other things. Check it out if you dare. I know you're not doing anything, assuming that the country isn't open back up by the time you're listening to this. So if you got an hour, would love it if you spent it with me. If you haven't already, please make sure you subscribe to the Preachers and Sneakers podcast on Apple Podcasts. Leave a rating, leave a review, and share it with your friends, your enemies, your frenemies, your exes, everybody. Big shout out to my homie SJ for providing the intro and ad music. It's from his new EP called In the Light. Follow him on Instagram at HereIsSJ, as well as on Spotify. If you just type in the letters S and J, he'll be the first one that pops up. Okay, enough chit-chat. Let's get to my conversation with Knox McCoy. Tell me about you, your entrance to podcasting, and then your entrance into authoring, and then we can go from there.
Writing, yeah, for sure. Authoring,
maybe that's not a verb, writing.
No, see, I think when you say authoring, you're like so high on your own supply of writing that people are like, whoa, this guy
authoring
is clearly a writer. Yeah. Noveling, et cetera, et cetera. So let's see. I was the cliche want to write person, you know, in like growing up, like I would as an 8-year-old, I would write, you know, books and draw the pictures and staple them together and give them to neighbors. And my neighbors would be like, I so didn't grateful. Ask for this. Please. Yeah. Please leave me alone, child. You know? So, but I always wanted to write.
Come back when you're selling Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah. Something that is actually of value, except this terrible prose and these terrible graphics. But, you know, in high school, middle school, I would do, you know, the literary magazines or whatever and write terrible poetry and awful short stories and stuff like that. I was an English major in college. But my dream was always, you know, to write a book. And I put that on hold after college, opened a sporting goods store with my dad. And we ran that right into the 2008 financial collapse. So I don't know if you know this. Retail. Yeah, like and retail specifically, people don't want to buy like a $250 baseball glove when like their 401k just dissolved, you know, in thin air. So that didn't go great. I turned that into we had a screen printing company alongside that, so I went to that and kind of ran that for a few years. And I'm not like an entrepreneur. I'm not a retail entrepreneur, right? So on the side, I had this bug to keep writing, and I started writing these really obnoxiously long bachelor and bachelorette recap of the show, because my wife would make watch it. So I was like, if I'm gonna watch it, I'll do 5,000 words on what happened here, right? So that's kind of how I started writing online. And then from there,
what year was that?
This was 2008, 2009. And we had just had our first kid, my son. And I was writing, I was like, I'll write about being a dad because that's super interesting. So, you know, so I'm doing that. And then I do that for a few years. And, you know, it's like I've got a little bit of people who read, but I can't do anything with it. I can't get a book deal or anything. So I guess in 2011, I think I go to a blog conference, meet some people, and it was there that someone pitched me on like, hey, we should do a podcast. And I was like, that's stupid. Podcasts are dumb. They're not going to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so then I do that. And I run through a couple different iterations of the podcast
all thinking, I'm going to turn this into a book deal, right? And all the, you know, the iterations fail. And eventually I meet my partner that I work with now, Jamie Golden, who we started a pop culture podcast called The Popcast with Knox and Jamie. We started that in 2013. So we're going to celebrate 6 years of the podcast here, I think this September. So,
wow. She's hilarious.
She is.
By the way.
She is.
I feel like her and I would be lifelong homies, as you and I
will
inevitably. But she has got, I love her. I love both of y'all's sense of humor. And she, it sounds like she could just go for hours and hours just riffing.
Well, do you speak the language of the Enneagram?
I do, yes.
Okay, what are you?
I'm a 3, wing 2.
Okay, so she's a 7, obviously. And 7s are just like, you just turn them on and they go for hours and they're just super extrovert. I'm the 5, so I'm like, I'm here, but as soon as I'm out, I go in the coffin. And I'm not going to talk to anybody for a little bit, you know? So, and we work with our COO here who works with us, Aaron Moon. She's a 3 as well. So there's an interesting extroversion-introversion dynamic at play here for
high
sure.
High achievement. That's good to have in a COO, I think, right? So she's pushing to...
Strategically, we were like, I guess we want the person who's going to work themselves to death. That's a good thing in a company, I guess.
And not sue us. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, so the podcast, you're talking about kind of surface level pop culture type things.
That's right.
And you've been doing that since 2013-ish. Right. And then where does the Bible Binge fit into that?
So I think it was, because it was right before the release of my first book, The Wandering Years, where we started doing, we had done an episode on the podcast where we talked about siblings in pop culture. And one of the examples we used was Jacob and Esau. And, you know, we kind of had fun with it, blah, blah, blah. And someone said, hey, you should do a podcast about the Bible. And we were like, should we do a podcast about the Bible? And we consulted all of our friends and, you know, pastors and everything. And everyone was like, don't do that. Specifically you guys, don't do that. Listen to
me. Have a lot of giftings.
It was like, you know, like, I'm gonna hold your face and look deep into your eyes. Do not do this. But we did it anyway, you know. And so we do,
but
it
the content,
yeah, it was like, but the content's so rich and there's a market out there. But so, but the thing was, we were like, we the hesitance was, we're not we haven't gone to seminary, right? Like, I went to a Church of God school. I graduated from Church of God school, but like graduated at as much arm's length as I could from that school. And Jamie went to Emory, so it wasn't like a Christian-based school. But, you know, we're practicing Christians. We've been to church our whole lives. Jamie's been in ministry, stuff like that. I wrote for a online Christian movie company, right? So we're all around the periphery. But we were like, we want to talk about the Bible, but like, what if stupid people could talk about the Bible? Is that okay? You know, because there are a lot of people, I think, who are intimidated to talk about the Bible because they don't have the knowledge or they're not a pastor or whatever. So we recap it like it's a movie, like a book or TV show. And the thing we do that I think gives us safety and comfort is Erin, our COO, she also is like a Bible scholar. So we do the whole episode and then she listens to it. And at the end she says, okay, this was wrong. You're dumb. That's not even true.
This is heresy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then we're like, okay, thank you. So it makes us feel safe. So we're like, the heart is good. The mind and the tongue is not always perfect in the execution of what we're trying to do.
That's awesome. My, the only reason I knew about it is because my wife listened to it pretty consistently. She works at a church and she was like, gosh, people are asking me about all these abstract Bible stories. I have no idea what they're talking about. Like, she works at a very like high achievement mega church here in Dallas. And they're always, they're like, they'll literally ask things like, who's your favorite abstract character in the Bible? And she's like,
what? Like, who Luke? Asks questions like that? That's crazy. Come on.
Churches that really, that love intentional questions. So she started listening to your podcast and connected with it because it was such a relatable, easy to understand set of stories for people that were so important to the faith, but also so easy to like skim over.
Yeah.
When you're like, so-and-so, son of so-and-so, son of so-and-so, son of so-and-so.
And like you, and you,
but y'all have the ability to make it into, in the Marines, we called it Barney style.
Okay.
But basically like very easy to understand terms.
Yeah. You know, and I think that, what we say is like we want to better understand the story, right? And I think there are, from my perspective, I grew up in the church. And I would, like, I knew these stories, like the broad strokes of it. But then we would look at it, and I'd be like, man, I never really picked that up. I didn't understand how much circumcision was, like, a big deal in the Old Testament. <You know? laughs> And they're like, I guess I need to understand
that. Yeah,
that
word did just kind of get glazed over growing up.
Yeah.
Because, like, I grew up in the South, too, and they'd be like, yeah, talking about, circumcised, uncircumcised. And you're right. Like, until you're talking about cutting off.
We talking about pee-pee cutting? And, like, that's good? And, like people are honoring each other with, like, doing it. I don't know. I just want to understand what's going on here because this is obviously important. So let's do that.
That's so awesome. So you did, through, I guess, before the Bible binge, but during the podcast, you wrote The Wandering Years, mm-hmm. which I've read.
Oh, awesome. Thank you.
And I love your writing style. It's and I think you and I probably had very similar upbringings in the way we kind of viewed some things. Do you mind real quickly talking about that book and what your goal with it was? And then maybe what you hoped people to get out of it, but also, you know, what you drew from in writing this whole thing.
Sure.
Because this is your first book.
Yeah, that's correct. And that's the book that, you know, back before we even had kids, like I was like, I want to write this book. And the working title was always like, Pop Culture Is My Sunday School Teacher, because at the heart of it, there was always, I grew up as a kid who I went to church and experienced church, and I rededicated my life, and I did all the, you know, the cliche Christian Southern, like Bible Belt evangelical Christian things of the 80s and the 90s.
Yeah,
but like I
crushed your Creed CDs or crushed your Dr. Dre CDs, yeah, and all that.
So here's the thing. I guess the Enneagram 5-ness was like, yeah, I'll totally do that. I'm not doing that, you know? Like, I pay good money for this. What are you talking about? You know, I like Thousand Foot Crutch and everything, but like, I'm not, I like Scott Stapp better, I guess. I don't know. Bad judgment, you know? I hit all those benchmarks and I had all those experiences, but I would see people who felt like were experiencing and resonating and feeling God. And I was like, I'm just not. And I'm not, I can't sit through the service and hear the same thing you're hearing, I guess. So part of it was out of frustration, but part of it also was, I think I just inherently resonated more with movies, books, TV, stuff like that. So The Wonder Years mm-hmm. is about kind of a childhood and a adolescence and a post-adolescence built around me kind of, I don't know, on the fly refashioning my ability to access God. So I would, so it talks about, you know, using The Godfather or talking about Full House or finding God in these other places, because I think I grew up with the mindset of, if you're not finding God on Wednesday nights, Sunday mornings, Sunday nights, God's not available to you. But, you know, in my experience, it was like, actually, I'm finding God in these other places, and that's okay. So a lot of it is reconciling my affinity for pop culture and my the experiences I've had where I felt God more deeply within elements of pop culture.
Did you grow up sheltered at all? Like in the South during the same time, we're probably close to the same age, there was a big focus, kind of like crushing the CDs, like on sheltering our Christian kids from pop culture itself. Did you grow up in that, or did you have full exposure?
Yeah. So your question
the
is
Simpsons,
like, okay, great. I was going to ask, like, were you allowed to ask this? I feel like the Simpsons is a line of demarcation of like what kind of Christian you were, you know, like, is this like an on the ground Christian or is this like a theoretical Christian? So I was not allowed Christian. To watch the Simpsons, but I think,
nor was I.
Okay. So I think that was like a baseline obvious thing for my parents, but my parents were very cool in that they were also, you know, they were invested in the church, but it was like, not to hyperbolic, not to hysterical senses, you know? So I would still watch like Mad About You or Designing Women with my mom. And it was like, it wasn't a big deal. And for us, I think the biggest thing was I grew up with a lot of friends. My wife actually, like she grew up and it was like, every time the church is open, you have to be there. My parents were more like, hey, Sunday nights, that's our time. And I know church is going, but we're gonna spend time together. So I think early on there was this template of love God, you know, be faithful, be intentional, but also be balanced. Have some perspective.
Realistic.
Yeah, be realistic.
Interesting. That's I think that's at the time that was probably a hard balance to strike. Like
there weren't a lot of other families back, doing that, right?
Yeah, like most were either didn't go to church at all or were freaking
yeah
every other day.
Yeah, very militant.
Yeah. So, so what was your experience like kind of shopping that proposal around? I mean, I'm going through this right now, or have just gone through this, like shopping your first proposal, you know, trying to pitch this idea with publishers. What was that experience for you?
You know, I think,
or what was that experience like for you?
It was fun. Cause it was like the, well, let me go back. Cause I had a hard time getting an agent because I think at some point I allowed the idea to be able to write. I don't know. I think the idea of writing about faith was always very intimidating to me. And it was kind of, it was the same thing about before doing the Bible binge. It was like, who am I? What do I have to say? I have no qualifications for talking. And I remember talking to a friend and being like, I'm going to let that ship sail because I'm not the guy. So I started writing like really, really bad fiction. And I got to meet with an agent and I gave it to her. And she was like, what is this? What have you done here? you have cursed fiction forever. Like, never contact me. But like, you know, luckily because of the podcast, and the podcast really did accomplish the thing of giving me a platform to where, unfortunately, people may or may not know this. A lot of times writers don't get deals based on the merits of their writing. A lot of it is who will listen to what they're saying. You know what I'm saying?
So, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that we grew to a point where that agent came back and she was like, let's do not the other thing, but anything else. Do you have anything else? And that's where I gave her the warning ears. But shopping it around, I found editors really receptive to the idea of a not traditional, here's like the fruits of the spirit, blah, blah, blah. Like, let's go in a different direction. And that's why I'm really interested in your process as well. And I think, you know, I don't know, do you know, we're publisher siblings? Because I'm with W as well. Yeah.
Yes.
And I think you're in really great hands because there's some good people there. But did you have the same kind of experience of like people being like, I'm really interested in this? Or were people like, what have you done?
I can totally attest to what you said as far as people get book deals based on who will listen, because I am so unqualified to write. I'm like, maybe like I'm pretty on the same par as like Snooki writing a book. Like she got a book deal, but
I
am
Snooki
equally...
has some good hooks and prose, man. Like, I don't know. You've clearly not read her book.
Yeah. Modern day Socrates. She and I, yeah. I mean, she's got a much bigger platform than I, but I didn't think there was a book here, because the whole thing was ridiculous. Like, this is an Instagram account and I fell into this and this blew up by no real, like, I'm not a writer. I've never written more than three sentences together. And so going through the process, thankfully I interviewed a guy, Jonathan Merritt, who's now my agent. And he basically said, look, I think there's a book here and I can help you build a proposal. Without him doing that, there wouldn't be a book, like, that, because there's so much industry related stuff that goes into the proposal that I just had zero clue about. Like, I had talked with one guy this summer and it's like, yeah, if you can put a book proposal together, I can see if there's a book here or not. But I was like, I don't freaking know what that is.
Yeah.
And I don't have the bandwidth to just build that in hopes that someone may bite into it. So I had a lot of help, and a lot of this has fallen in my lap. So I know a lot of actual authors are kind of rolling their eyes like, God, I've been working for this for years and years.
You know what, though? Let me stop you there, because I think that, some people might be rolling their eyes. Like me in 2010, writing bad bachelor recaps and writing about being a dad, you know, I would have been like, that sucks. That's not fair. But it's like, have you turned the corner? Because, I, you know, obviously I listened to the show, and I listened specifically to the Tyler Huckabee interview, which I love Tyler.
Yeah.
And I thought this is going to be great.
He's the best.
He's just the best. And it was a really great show.
He's really freaking smart.
Yeah. Yeah. He really is. But like you guys talking about it, I got the sense that, have you turned the corner on, I haven't won the lottery. I actually have brought something to light and I have a point of view, and this is like, I've earned this opportunity, so I get to talk now. Have you made that turn?
A little bit. Yeah. The validation came, I mean, getting the book was some validation.
Sure.
Like, building the proposal helped me to kind of outline what my actual thoughts are on the subject and the deeper issues, around like consumerism and capitalism and celebrity culture in the church. And so that's been a relatively new thing for like the first, I mean, we're at a little bit over a year of this account existing. for a long time, I was like, I don't know what this is. I don't know why people are freaking out. Like, I like the attention. I like, you know, talking to celebrities. I like, you know, having cool merch. And,
sure.
You know, selling hoodies and stuff. But now I firmly believe that it's something worth wrestling with. The whole idea of should we care if faith leaders are profiting, mm-hmm. not making a living wage, but like profiting and creating massive wealth off of purely being a preacher or a pastor.
Yeah.
Is it appropriate for there to be celebrities that like Christians that are turned into celebrities while also elevating the God that they became celebrities for being so good at performing or preaching about?
Yeah.
Or like smaller, like surface level things like church merch. Like, is that just cool
yeah.
branding that's in alignment with pop culture, or is it more like a golden calf where we're worshiping the brand of this church
yeah.
and not, so like all those things I didn't care about a year ago and didn't realize that there was a market for trying to wrestle through those things. But now it's pretty evident that people don't know what to do with all these different things. With a, like an asterisk that yes, the coronavirus is going on.
Sure.
Like that is a much more glaring topic. Like I recognize some of these are more secondary issues, but, it's still worth grappling with. Cause I hope that at a certain point we're all going to start gathering together again.
Yeah.
And, we're going to have to wrestle like the whole idea with social media, like for Christians, are you causing people to envy by posting certain things on social media? Like, should we care or think through the things that we post about?
Yeah.
Like there's the easy targets of like, should I post this scantily clad picture of myself
right.
or me freaking doing a keg stand? But the things more like, oh, I'm on this dope vacation. Everyone look how awesome my life is.
Yeah.
Things like that
yeah.
are, I think, worth wrestling through. And so, yeah, I feel more validated and more like encouraged to write about those things. And that's what I'm writing about. But yeah, for the longest time, I felt like a fraud. Just
oh,
that
sure.
I was like, dude, I'm this average idiot dude that never wanted to be an activist for anything. I just liked sneakers and liked
yeah.
making people laugh. And now I'm, you know, you and I are talking together. It's a very interesting.
Look where you are now talking to me, right? I don't know if that's like good or like, really, really bad, but no.
One of our, yeah, maybe both of our careers will concurrently skyrocket. There's some daily comforts that just make you grateful and feel more grounded in life. Petting your pups, smashing the snooze button, and of course, that first cup of Joe in the morning. These are things that you count on every day to help you get where you want to go. Things like the Upper Room Daily Devotional Guide. You can count on the Upper Room for daily inspiration, daily community, and daily prayer. It's the only daily devotional magazine written by readers, ordinary people, people who have encountered God in daily situations. The Upper Room is here for you every day through your email, a custom app, or printed magazine. Enjoy a free 30-day trial of their email or app service by visiting upperroom.org/welcome. That's upperroom.org/welcome to get your first 30 days free. Now back to my conversation with Knox McCoy. I have had a lot of like people at W are like, dude, this is an amazing conversation. This is a huge book. Like, I mean, probably stroking me a little bit, but on the opposite end, other publishers are like, dude, we don't want to touch this.
Really?
We're going to upset our other authors. We're going to upset the bait, like the people that are making millions off of Christian self-help books.
Sure. Yeah. We're representing like, the people you're talking about, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And so I get it. I understand it, but that only fuels me more to say, okay, clearly this is indicative of something that's going on in people's hearts where the publishers are literally afraid. Like some, when I signed with W, some of the other authors had their agents like contact the publisher and say, why are you giving this guy a platform? Why are you,
oh man,
like elevating this guy's message? And so I'm like, all right, I guess I'm still touching a nerve.
Oh, you 100% are. And it made me so happy because the second I guess I saw your Instagram post when you announced it, and I emailed Damon at W, and I was like, is this you? Like, what's happened here? And he was like, yeah, this is me. And I was like, thank you. This is so great. I'm so encouraged by this because not that it's like the punk rockification of, you know, Christian literature, but I think there is a absence of nuanced Christian conversation. It is just very like we have to play the hits, and the hits are great because they're the Bible and Jesus, and I love those things, you know, like blah, 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 whatever. Yeah. But I think there is a generation of people and a silent majority of people who are like, yeah, but like there are some complicated things that no one's talking about, and I feel weird. And I think that's what your account really hit on, is this thing that was like subconsciously lurking for everyone. And then you applied a pressure valve release and everyone's like, thank you. That's it. That was making me uncomfortable. And finally I have a cool Instagram account to really have catharsis with this idea. So I think there's such a lack of people willing to have, because what you're talking about, consumerism, brands, monetization, like those are so nuanced. And I don't think you've ever pretended to be like, no, it's actually really easy. It's really difficult, and that's okay. It's great to be really difficult, because I think in the pursuit of understanding those difficult conversations, we will arrive at some really interesting, compelling, heartful truths that help us understand. But I think, to me, you didn't ask my opinion, but I think the biggest thing you've revealed here is the fragility of the evangelical Christian hierarchy of people just not used to being checked, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's fascinating.
The tough part for a long time, like I wanted everybody to be happy. I mean, I still want everybody to be happy and like be happy with me. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't love upsetting people. I mean, and a lot of this, you know, kind of like you said, this cool Instagram account that was so cathartic for a lot of people, that was born out of pure ignorance. It was just me being kind of irritated and also like trying to make people laugh. And then it kind of opened those floodgates for people's opinions about these things. And so it started out of pure ignorance, but I lost my train of thought. What were you just saying? I had a point to what you just said.
The fragility of evangelical Christian dudes.
I've only had four coffees today. The thing for me was like I was so unsure for a long time about whether or not it was good or not what I was doing. Like it felt partially like, oh, I'm causing division. I'm being like nitpicky. I'm, you know, stirring the pot. But I think a lot of people's negative response to it was that you're right. These things hadn't been questioned before, and I wasn't doing it in a perfect way, but I was causing people to choose a side on what they believed about some of these things that before they just thought existed. And when I was like, is this appropriate? Or like, is this how Christian leaders are to be living? I'm not saying I have the answers. I'm just saying this is the question that I have. And I've still tried to live in that tension of like, can I ask the question without having an answer? And apparently you can, but for a long time I didn't know that could exist. Like, and it's a lot, I mean, it's kind of a segue, but your whole next book is about that, right? Like reconsidering things that are so cemented.
Yes. And when you were talking about that, I thought like, I remember being so thankful for your account because it put, you know, I was already writing and thinking about this whole thing because the end of The Wandering Years made me want to write a book about just like, because, you know, the last chapter in The Wandering Years is about my dad's cancer diagnosis, and it's not this cliche like, why God, you know, kind of thing. It's just more like, oh, so now I'm like really going to think about mortality and like, do good people deserve things and all that stuff and what I believe, blah, blah, blah. So I wanted the second book to really examine that. So I was really thankful for your account because it kind of helped buoy that motivation and momentum, because it was this thing of like, I'm not telling you how to think. I'm just like, hey, there's this thing happening and I don't know what to feel about that. And I don't have the answer. And I think that's another part of it, is people feel like you present an idea, you have the answer, you move on and you don't question that. And I think a lot of times, no, actually I think the more realistic thing is you present an idea, you don't really know, and you don't really land on anything definitive. But as a generation of Christianity has told us, no, you land on a thing, you move on, you never reconsider it, and that's it for freaking ever. And that's just not super realistic, you know?
Yeah, and I've been going through that the past few years of my life too, like growing up deep south, became a Christian at 8. This was the answer. I had a good grasp on the gospel and the Bible and where everybody was going and what I needed to do as a Christian. But the past few years, it's like there's so much nuance in life that I wasn't ever charged with grappling with until the past few years. Mm-hmm. And I'm still a Christian, still very much believe in the gospel, but I sit in a few more gray areas now.
Yeah.
And I think maybe our generation more so than our parents' generation are okay with being like, I don't know, man. And like, you kind of look like a jackass if you say, no, this is the answer.
Yeah.
I have the answer. Like, those people get raked over the coals on Twitter when they're like, no, this is it. And I'm sitting here in the middle, like, I empathize with a lot of these different sides. Is that okay? Or am I being a pushover?
Mm-hmm.
But so rarely is it received well to be like, this is the truth. This is the answer. There is no other answer to this topic. Now, granted, I believe that Jesus is the way, the truth, and life. I'm not talking about that.
Sure.
I'm talking more about like secondary type issues that I've had to grapple with. Like, what about you? Like, reading through, I got access to your book early. I don't know if they told you that, but I want to talk about some of the funny parts. But the premise is basically reconsidering kind of three different categories
right.
of life.
Yes.
Could you talk about that and maybe talk about, because this is something that I'm going through too. It's like,
yeah,
is it okay to reconsider some of these things that have been gospel, quote unquote, throughout your entire life?
Yeah, no, so for sure. Like, so the sections, it's like reconsider yourself, reconsider your life, reconsider your faith. And, you know, I didn't really want to write about faith stuff because at the end of the Wonder Year, I think writing the Wonder Years, I was very close to the vest about things I believe because I just was an insecure writer. You know, like I was like, I don't really.
You wanted to sell a bunch of books.
Yeah. And it was like, I don't have the confidence to, you know, and a lot of it, I will give credit to the Bible Binge because when you do a show where you talk about the Bible, yes, we have a Bible scholar who comes in and cleans up our mess, but at the same time, you don't do that without putting yourself to the test and like knowing, hey, I'm going to go on the record, X amount of thousands of people are going to listen, and I got to know what I'm talking. I at least have to know why I think what I'm thinking here, you know? So that process was really helpful. So when I started to write the All Things Reconsidered, I thought, you know, the people tell you write the book you want to read. And I thought, I just wish I could read a Christian author who was like, I'm just going to try to figure out stuff. And I don't really know what I think. I know what I started with. It is a book about deconstruction, you know, especially the last section. But a lot of it is just like, this isn't my 10 steps to be a better Christian. Because I don't know that. That's not me. I'm not that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But I am just going to let you watch me as I work through some stuff. I'm going to work through like what it means to be home, what it means to have a terrible birthday in December, what it means to be suspicious of Uncle Joey from Full House or Big Bird, you know, from Sesame Street. but also, I'm gonna let you watch me work through what I think about hell. And if I land on something definitive or something I don't know, that's okay because this is my journey and whatever you got to do with yours. You got to do with yours. And I'm glad you said, you know, I think our, you know, millennials or whatever, we get a reputation of just everything is nothing, you know, like it's just whatever, whatever. And I think that's a good aspect, but it has to be tethered to some dogmatic, I do actually believe this and I'm not going to, this can't be shaken, you know? So, I try to talk about in the book, the thing that keeps me in Christianity. And I think we have to identify the things that we are tethered to and that it's like whatever, in the Odyssey, when Odysseus is like, he's hearing the sirens and he wants to go with them, but he ties himself to the mast, so he doesn't.
Total babes.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly, right? There's some things we got to tie ourselves to the mast to because those masts are the foundation. But I think we also have to consider and hear some things to know what we actually do believe. Because when we live in that shell and that shroud of just, I learned this when I was 8, so I guess it's perfect forever, that's a failure too.
That's not a good foundation to stand on because that's why so many people I think in college just lose their faith because that's what their faith was based on.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I grew up with this. And then some smart person's like, well, what about this? And like, oh, I guess I don't believe any of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're so right. Like having to absolutely believe in things, but also know why you believe those things. Like give a little bit of effort in why you believe things. Like maybe the things you grew up with are the truth, but it's up to you as a grown-ass person to wrestle through why you believe those
things. Yeah, and you know, I think a lot of us, not everyone obviously, but a lot of us, we just inherited these, we inherited a location, we inherited a routine, and we inherited beliefs. So this isn't about tearing those apart. It's just when you're given something versus when you have to pay for it or you earn it, it's different. And like this process of deconstruction, I think for a lot of people, they think that's a bad word, but I think actually it's the process of earning what you actually believe versus just giving the rhetoric you've been given and reciting it like you've always recited for your whole life.
What kind of pushback have you gotten from that? I mean, got it. The book's not out until June 2nd. Is that when it comes out?
Right. Correct.
Surely you have followers that are like, dude, what are you doing? Or dude, you sound like Rob Bell.
I wish I wrote like Rob Bell. That would be an upgrade. What are you talking about? No.
Your bank account. Yeah.
So I think we have been for the podcast and, you know, everything we do as a company, the podcast, well, with Next to Jamie, the Bible Binge, even All Things Recapped, our recap show. Unintentionally, we started this as like, we're talking about pop culture. Also, Whisper, by the way, we're Christians. Not a big deal. That's just what's up, you know? It's not a weapon. We're not threatening you. We happen to be Christians. We also like Game of Thrones.
We're cool. We drink wine.
That's right. No big deal. Let's not be weird about this. So it was always like inside out. So it was always, I think we were really attractive to other Christians who were like, I also do like to watch Game of Thrones or Sopranos. Not a big deal. Let's just all be cool here. So I think that has given us an audience of people not by our own doing, that have been like eager to go along this journey of, yeah, like I also contain multitudes and I watch secular things, but I believe in the sacred. So there have been a lot of people who have not been mean. They've just been like, hey, like you said this on the Bible Binge. I don't believe that. I just want to understand how you arrived at that because I thought that was really cool. And we might not agree, but like, I just want to know where you got that. And I've mentioned some things, you know, to people, to readers and listeners on my newsletter of what I'm talking about. And people are interested not in a, I cannot believe you, but in a, wow, that's really interesting. Like, I'm not going to agree with you, but let's talk about that. So it's given me a lot of encouragement, again, it's not a thing of like, you have to read this and agree with me, but more, there are a lot of people open and willing to reconsidering things and wanting to hear that conversation more than there are people, to me at least, more than there are people who are like, no, I want to read a book that reinforces exactly what I believe. I think we've gotten tired of that. I think those books are a little over the hill now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they somehow still sell a ton of those books, though, because they keep making them.
They do.
10 Steps to Live Your Best Life Now in 2020. That's interesting. So, like, on the majority, you've gotten positive feedback. Like,
yeah, well,
you don't deal with many people that are.
Yeah, the book's not out yet.
F you, dude. This is heresy. So,
I'm sure that will happen. You know, and I just.
But in the But
I don't read reviews, so I don't know what's going to happen on Amazon. But you know, I hopefully, and I go to great lengths in the book to say, this is not a guide. I'm not an expert. I'm kind of dumb. Whatever. You know, like honor what I'm trying to do rather than where I arrive. More than anything.
I think that's pretty wise to not read reviews, right? Like that only could just either overinflate your ego or destroy your self-worth.
Yeah. And
is that why you don't do it?
I think for most people, I don't know if people are like me, but I could get 100 good reviews, but the one bad one, I'll be like, well, I guess I do suck. I am the worst. They're right. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I imagine people with platforms talk about that all the time, but like, yeah, I'm the same way. Like I can have one freaking snarky, misinformed comment ruined my entire day. I'm like, I'm going to murder this person.
Well, yours verbally is interesting because I think you will have people, obviously, who are like, you're the devil, and you're like, you just got to laugh that off, which I've never been called the devil. Yeah. That's probably tough. But you also have people who are like, yes, I agree with you. These people should go to hell. And you have to also be like, wait, not what I was saying.
Yes, exactly. It's like, that's the thing with social media. It's like, you just give, everyone has the same opportunity to come in and drop their piece and then bounce. And
that's right.
Whoa, guys, like, yes, it is a worthy question, but also let's be civil here.
Let's be
like,
chill.
I'm hurt by the church. Yeah. I wasn't hurt by the church. Like, let's all be chill.
That's right.
So, but on this next book, like I've read through half of it, in your style of writing, I had some audible lulls, which is very rare for me, which I think is a testament to your ability to maybe relate to the common man, because that's who I am.
Thank you. That's high praise.
And because I think we're probably a lot alike. Like you talk about taking pictures after your live events and trying to get your neck right. That is just so, like, I highlighted it because like, this is what I think, like, why take a picture now when we could take a picture in a year when I've lost 20 pounds and developed a jawline.
I'll lose the weight. We'll do it later. It's fine.
Yeah. I'd like, where did that come from? Like, could you talk to that experience? Maybe I know people, I mean, we want people to read the book, but, I want to ask about that and then about two other things.
Sure.
Like, where did that whole thought process come from about your neck and jawline? Because as you can see,
so like I don't have the chapter is it's called Boy Change Your Face, and it's a riff off of a popular
Girl Wipe Your Face.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe
wash
not.
Your face. Wash
knows?
Your face.
Who knows? See, we call it Girl
not
Wash Your Butt.
Not infringing on anything. Yeah.
It's, you know, just the language of humanity is rich, and maybe there's overlap. Who knows? But, like, it's a riff off the self-helpness of, like, I don't know. I feel crap. Like, I'm not trying to be crappy, but I feel like there's a commoditization of, like, people telling you things you already know. And, like, oh, yeah, I guess I should wash my face, or I should love myself or whatever. But the chapter is really talking about, you know, we started doing live shows for the podcast, which are amazing and great. And later this year, we're going to do a tour with Compassion where we're
nice.
We're going to, like, I think 13 cities. We're going to get some kids sponsored. It's really great. We're really excited. The thing, I love the live shows, and we get to meet people. That's my favorite part, is meeting listeners, because you're doing a podcast. You're screaming into the void. You don't know if people are listening. But when you actually get to meet and talk to people, it's incredible. But the tough part for me is, like, I'm just not a picture taker. I don't know if you are. Like, I don't know if you grew up like,
no,
let's take a shot here. You know, it's just not my life. So like, there's the assembly line of, like, hey, great to meet you. Talk. Let's take a picture. And I am reminded of how not good at taking pictures I am. So, like, it's a chapter about just the different, you got to work angles and you dip your neck and you're all in pursuit of trying to look as skinny as you possibly can, right? Or, like, as good in the picture as you possibly can. So, and there's obviously a metaphor and a deeper point there. But I think it's a weird reality of the world of, I'm having this authentic moment with you and we're connecting. And now we have to take something for social media, which I want to look as good as I can. I don't know why I'm not going to look at these, because I'm so scared of what I'm going to look at. But there's just that weird layer now to interactions and relationships that it's kind of unprecedented, you know?
Yeah, that is interesting. It's like just a brief moment of uncontrolled vanity. It's like, I want people to think that I look good, even though this is how I actually look.
Yeah.
And I should be okay with how I look right now, but I'm going to contort myself to try to look like I'm not.
Yeah.
Or look like I'm something I'm not. And it's such like a picture into our maybe insecurities or our hearts behind things. I do the same thing. Like, try to jut your head out and freaking, I think you called it looking like a turtle popping out of its shell.
That's right.
Doing the same thing, trying to get like a Hollywood jawline, when in fact it's just like, dude,
is what it is.
In the cards for me. Yeah. That's so funny. I don't laugh out loud at many books, but I read that and I was like, this dude gets it. And
thank you,
and
man.
I just
I
laughed.
Appreciate that.
And so, like, I'm so appreciative of that. And that's a hard thing to do. Like,
sure.
A lot of people don't like reading, and to have an entertaining style of writing is hard to come by. So
that's awesome,
that.
Man. Thank you.
And then, yeah, absolutely. And then you have a chapter about sex scenes, which I also so related to. Could you talk about that? Just, I guess, in brief. I don't want to give away the whole book.
But sure, sure.
In brief, could you talk about that chapter?
Yeah. So, like, obviously, like, I write about, you know, like, really heartful things and really heavy things. But when I set out to write the book, I wanted to write, like, not micro chapters, but I also wanted to include, like, almost interludes of, this isn't a super long chapter, this is just a weird thing I want to reconsider. And one of those was sex scenes, because I think I'd watched something with my wife, and it was a movie. And, you know, most of the time we don't watch stuff during the day. We just kind of wait till the night, because you don't know what's going to come on. But this was one of those, like, long weekends where all three or one of our kids was in the background. And it was a thing I thought was pretty safe. And then, like, cut to just, like, body smacking. And so we're scrambling for the remote, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. And so I started thinking, like, wait, like, why do we still have the sex scene? Because it feels like a relic of a different time where – and to me it was like, look, if that's your thing, that's what you want to, like, want to go for, there's a place for that. That's not this movie or TV show,
right?
You know? So it was like this weird consideration of this holdover where you might get, like, a stray breast or something, or a storyline. And I kind of want a world. It's not about me being puritanical or like a reformed Southern Baptist. It's just like, I don't know. I just don't understand why we still got bodies here. You know, like why we got new parts here. Someone explain like,
I'd love to see the science or the data on that, because I had never considered that until you wrote about it. It's like, this is a pretty antiquated tactic to get eyeballs.
Yeah.
Like, we all know what you're doing.
Right.
And it rarely adds much to the storyline. And it's hasn't changed since the 70s.
And there's
the
no
80s,
like mechanism
really.
To critique it. There's no one online being like, that sex scene was actually really well done and here's why. You know, like
nobody's
just
winning an Oscar for theirs.
I think I would respect the idea if there was a category for like best sex scene. Because then you know, it would like institutionalize it. And in that respect, it's almost like with Game of Thrones, I respected what they were trying, because it's like, hey, medieval stuff, dragons, sex scene, and like that was their formula. So it's like, I, you know, whatever, mileage may vary on if you like that, but at least they own it, you know, at least they're like leaning into it, I guess.
Like, it's I haven't watched many episodes of that, but it's, you can tell they're purposely like oversaturating on all those things.
Oh yeah,
to make it be the most like attractive / edgy type show out there.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like, look, when you come here, you're going to get all of this.
Here's what we're about, you know? It's like the shark from Jaws, but if the shark had boobs and you're going to see its butt and you liked it or whatever. I don't know.
Oh, so dumb. But it's true. And so do you still write movie reviews? You said you worked for, did you work for like Plugged In or something?
Who no, I wish it was like that. It was, I did some podcasting recap stuff on the side. And then like on just the old blog, very unofficial stuff like that. So, okay. Our third podcast though is All Things Recapped. And right now I'm doing, Survivor season 40. Like, I'm recapping each episode, but after that's over, I will do, movies and just kind of stray TV shows.
Capacity. How do you have a capacity for a third podcast?
That's a great question. Right, that's a really great question. It's not a good idea, and I don't know why that I'm always.
How does your wife feel about it?
She is. Luckily, I can cram this all into the day. When you have like a podcast studio, it's like, I don't know, that mic's just sitting there. We should do something, you know. And I'm always the one with the bad ideas. But the good thing is, I like the, like, I know this is a hard season right now, but I like the seasonality of it. Because with the podcast, we're on the every Wednesday until infinity. And that's like, it's intimidating. But when you can build out around and say, no, this is just like the Bible Binge is seasonal and Survivor's just twice a year, then it gets a little more doable.
Yeah, interesting. I need to get a studio. That's nice. When did you make the plunge to like actually incorporate and say, all right, this is our full-time thing?
So I actually lived my whole life in Chattanooga, Tennessee, basically. And Jamie and I started our company, you know, in 2013. By like 2017, we'd only met twice, like in real life. And it's just like you could do everything over the internet and Google Hangouts and stuff. So it was about, it was 2018 when Ashley and I had been getting the itch to kind of move for a while. I think we needed a change of scenery. Our kids needed a change of scenery. And Erin here, she's in Birmingham. Jamie's in Birmingham. And it was like, look, we've got a business here. If we're going to take it to the next level, let's just do the thing. So we moved. And then a couple months after moving, we found an office space and was like, let's turn this into a studio. Let's do the whole thing.
Interesting. I have some friends that live in Birmingham and they love it.
It's
great. That's where you are currently, right?
Yeah, I actually.
What's the attraction?
You know, it's just like, I think I spent a year here going to Sanford in college, and then I moved back to, because I knew I was going to marry Ashley. So I moved back because I thought I don't want to do the long distance thing while we're engaged. But it's just, it's a big southern city. So there's the southernness of it. It's not like Atlanta where you cannot drive anywhere ever. But it's big enough where the food scene's great, and it's like it feels like four different sections. So you can kind of go into any section you want to get the thing you want. Good, really great schools. It's just and it's really close to the beach. It's kind of close to like all the different places. It's not too far away from anything. So I just love the charm. I love the weather. I love the whole thing here.
That's awesome. So do y'all do Gulf Shores? Is that where you usually go to the beach?
You know, I grew up going to Hilton Head. That's where we've been like for my whole life. And now like with Gulf Shores and Orange Beach so close, we are destined. Like we go kind of in that area a little bit.
That's nice. I did a summer project in Destin one summer, and then I was stationed in Pensacola for a year.
Okay.
I have a very that whole area has a very special place in my heart.
That's cool. It's a really great place.
Yeah, Florida. I mean, and the cost of living is probably pretty reasonable.
It's not bad. It's a little more than Chattanooga, but it's not. It's super reasonable, especially compared to an Atlanta or something like that.
So you have like a $1.5 million house.
2.5. But yeah.
The taxes, though.
The taxes get you. But like this, I mean, you know this. Podcasting, super lucrative. Super lucrative.
It's incredibly lucrative, and people are forgiving, and it's just in super high demand, and it's like a very unsaturated market.
It's like there's literally 1 million podcasts on iTunes, and I'm like, I don't know. 200 of them are listenable probably. So the trick is just getting those 200, I think.
Yeah. So like I'm just so interested in this for my own career. Like what was the tipping point for doing podcasting full time? Like what, was it a number? Was it a revenue number? Was it a,
so
I have no idea about any of this.
No, this is great. And I think a lot of people are like, well, you know, just even in my life, when I introduce myself, I am like, hey, I'm Knox. And they'll say, what do you do? And I'm like, you know,
I could say I'm an influencer. I could say I'm a podcaster. None of it.
So what I do,
cool,
I say I co-own a media company, which is technically true. It's just like if you say I do podcasts, people are like, what is happening? Who is this guy? So it's an uncomplicated way of saying it. But I guess it was 2014. Anyways, I started writing for the Christian Online Movie Company out of Dallas, skitguys.com. They're great dudes. They make like mini movies for churches to show before and after services. Study packs, devotions, all that stuff. I love them. They were great. At the end of that run, the podcast was starting to pick up, and we had started getting ads. But the big move we made was we created a premium category for our podcast on Patreon, where it was like, you know, we'll do this, this, and this. That's where we started to pick up a little bit of momentum. And I got to a point of this Skit Guys thing is my full-time job, and they're great. But if we're going to take the podcast to the next level, I have to make a move here and I have to go all in. And the money wasn't quite there yet, but I picked up a lot of copywriting jobs, you know, script stuff on the side where I could fulfill our income stuff while we really pushed on the podcast. So that was the big moment. Yeah.
Did you have a like a booker for ads, or how did you go about sourcing?
It was just ads? Like, honestly, what I would do is I would go through our Instagram followers and I would just see who followed us. Did they own a business? If they did, I would cold call them and be like, hey, you want to be on a podcast? And they'd be like, what's a podcast? And I'm like, I don't know. You literally follow us. You should know this, you know? But that was it for a little while. And then, a network, Wondery out of LA, contacted us and said, hey, we want you, would you be interested in coming on our network? And we were like, a billion percent. Yes.
Yes. That's the only way to make it right now is to get on a network like that. I mean, they did like Dr. Death.
They really did.
They've done, I mean, they're crushing.
They're crushing. They own their original content, obviously, and they have done a great job with that. They also have a handful of partner shows, which we are, who they do amazing stuff for us. They're great there. We're talking about a different kind of partnership with them, like maybe going more all in with them because they're interested in us. But man, like having someone handle your doing the onboarding call and being like, okay, this is what you want me to say about your plunger. Great. And then like making the copy so we can like, it's such a great, we don't do that with the Bible Binge. We handle that in-house. It's a little bit more work, but we have a little bit more control. So, but it's a game changer.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's so huge. Congrats. I mean,
thanks, man.
I mean, you're living a lot of people's dream right now. It's like just podcasting for a living.
You know, we talked about it and it was like, you don't, as a kid, you don't grow up and think, I wish I could be a podcaster when I grew up, because it didn't exist. But like, if I could have thought of a job like this, I really like this job. It's a lot of fun. You know, it's kind of everything you would want, because you get to spit hot takes about HBO shows and watch TV and movies, you know, and bring that to the people. So it's good stuff.
And you get to play to your strengths. Like that's what I want out of a career, is just to be able to do something every day that is playing off my strengths.
Yeah.
Not forcing me to like do accounting or like be good at something that is a drudgery. Like, it's, that's the dream, is to be able to do something that it's like, oh, I feel born to be able to make funny quips about pop culture.
It's a nice dovetailing, you know. It's the only other thing is, like, I just grew up, I played sports. I still love sports. Sports is like most of what I consume. That I try to like shoehorn that in to be like, let's talk about sports for a second, even though it's not really like our demo, but that's the only missing piece right now is just sports.
I see. Mm-hmm. Did you watch the MJ documentary, first two episodes?
You know I did. Oh my gosh. Listen.
Does it just bring back just all the nostalgia juices?
It really, and especially right now because, you know, there are no sports, it feels like the closest thing to sports. But yeah, it's not that I didn't know that Michael Jordan was great. It's just, it reminds you of just how great he was watching those highlights.
Yeah. I love him so much. Like, and he's just was at such a different level to anything.
Yeah.
In any category.
Yeah.
It's amazing to have. I mean, I feel guilty for not having appreciated it as much back then. Like, I was probably 8 or 9 years old.
Sure.
So like, I was aware of what was going on, but I didn't know I was experiencing once in a lifetime.
Like, this was your window to see it. You better yeah. enjoy it, you know, because yeah. it's going
to probably
go
complained
away.
About it being on TV or something, or wanting to do something else. All right, Knox. Well, I've taken plenty of your time. If people want to find you in all the different places on the internet, how can they do so?
So I'm on all the socials at Knox McCoy. Obviously, we have the podcast with Knox and Jamie on iTunes, the Bible Binge on iTunes, All Things Recapped on iTunes. If you want to check out the book, knoxmccoy.com/book, you can get, I think there's 2 chapters you can check out, and I've got little notes in the margin about like what I thought about going into the book. It comes out June 2nd, all that good stuff. So I'm creating, I've got this community of people who pre-order the book, knoxmccoy.com/bestfriend. Go there, just prove you pre-ordered it, and I'm doing all these interviews, side podcast episodes just for people. You don't have to do anything, like you just get to do that if you pre-order the book, so you can check that out there.
That's awesome. Yeah, check out his book, All Things Reconsidered, as well as all the other content he's pushing out. Knox, you're a freaking machine, dude.
Thanks, man.
I feel guilty at this point for like the amount of free time I have, I guess.
No way, man. No way.
Crushing the game.
See, I don't deal with Instagram comments. You do, so that's the equalizer.
That's true. That's true. People are questioning your salvation a lot less than maybe
That's
me.
Right. Just under their breath.
So, yeah. Well, hey, I appreciate you taking the time. This was super fun, and I think you and I are going to be the best of friends, hopefully.
I think so, man. Thanks so much. This was a ton of fun.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Preachers and Sneakers podcast. If you liked it, head on over to Apple Podcasts, hit subscribe, leave us a rating and a review. It's incredibly helpful to me. I appreciate you spending the time with us today, and please make sure you check out the next episode of the Preachers and Sneakers podcast.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy 2, get 2 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.